Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to season 4 of the Behind the Scenes podcast, Soap from the Box. I'm Lee Salisbury, television director and producer and now podcaster, and we are back bigger and better, not only talking to the actors who play your favourite characters in EastEnders, Coronation Street, Emmerdale, Hollyoaks, Home and Away and Neighbours, which is also coming back to our screens, but also extra special Pop from the Box music guests and some huge TV and film specials. And don't just listen anywhere. To be VIP, you need to listen on the Another Slice podcast player. It's free to sign up to, and you'll get to hear exclusive audio and video clips you won't get anywhere else. And all the latest news from us directly lands in your inbox. This week, you get to hear an unedited, extended version of this episode for free over on Another Slice. Remember, there's also an extra special episode with EastEnders and I'm a Celebrity star, Jacqueline Josser. It's free to listen to. You just need to head to anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox and sign up with us. Sign up. It's going to be a huge year and we want you on the ride with us. You can also choose to subscribe for a couple of quid. You get even more special content, including the chance to ask your questions to the stars and get exclusive special episodes like Jacqueline Josser that will be for your ears only. You'll also be able to hear extended episodes and episodes before anyone else. Head to anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox. Right, come on, let's get going. Here's this week's episode. Last Christmas, a father figure mentioned to me how much he liked EastEnders. In fact, it was more of a careless whisper, so I may as well share the news with you. I tried to book Club Tropicana to record this interview and was just praying for time, but some cowboys and angels got there before me. So I went outside, called this lady's agent and said, I know I can't make you love me because I'm too funky, but could I please interview the legend that is Cheryl Ferguson, famous for playing Heather Trott from 2007 until 2012. I knew you were waiting, Cheryl, but hello.
Oh my gosh, that was probably one of the best introductions I've ever had to an interview. We are talking, of course, the lovely George Michael there. But how wonderful was that? That was very cleverly.
I know. There were quite a long... So if anyone's totally confused now listening and thinking, what the hell is he talking about? Obviously, they were all George Michael songs. I didn't actually say to Cheryl's agent, I can't make you love me. but Heather was, of course, a mad George Michael fan. I mean, I've never asked you this. Was that planned from the beginning? And was that something you had an input in?
Well, I've always been a big George Michael Wham fan. And when I actually got the part of Heather, we talked through storylines, we talked through the character. And they said to me, look, you know, Heather is a woman who's sort of stuck in the 80s, who actually is obsessed with and idolises George Michael. How do you feel about that? And I was being really cool about it and going, oh, yeah, that sounds very good. And inside I was secretly going, yes.
It's amazing.
I was going to say amazing, but I said, it was brilliant that they would, that I could actually come and have something of my own added to that. You know what I mean? So, no, it wasn't really my decision for George to be my, for me to be George's fantastic number one fan, but
it was a decision you loved.
I loved it. Yeah, it was great.
It gives you something to go on, because you also, Heather also loved, I mean, headbands were a major part of her life, which was obviously
that was
80s.
My, so the headbands that Heather wore were actually my choice, which I don't know what was a good choice in the end, because I had so much headache with them, because I don't know if you've ever worn a headband, but if you wear a headband, especially the hard ones, they dig into your temples. And so I was, you know, there was quite a lot of paracetamol taking in the early days because it gave me headache. But eventually I learned to ask them for soft headbands and that was better. But yeah, they were my idea. It's, I kind of came up with this story because she had a terrible, horrible mother in it, but you never saw her dad. And I sort of said that maybe when she was younger, her dad had said to her how pretty she looked with a head, you know, wearing headbands. And that was my sort of inner story, that's why Heather always wore headbands, because she felt that was where, you know, she...
That was her, like, comfort blanket of dad.
Yes, yeah, basically. So they never really looked into my dad, which is a bit of a shame. There's and the weird thing about that is that, you know, there were several people who kept coming up to me, several actors who would say, well, can I come on to EastEnders and play your dad? And one of them I'd actually met, love his heart, is this... pass away now, but I went to a charity and Bob Hoskins was there and my agent was there, and it was all to do with what a charity they sort of do together, and he said he would love to have come in and played my dad for a few episodes.
Wow.
And I went up to the head office and said, this is the truth, last night I was here, Linda Hembury was with me, and this happened, and Bob Hoskins said, and they didn't take it up. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, how wonderful would that have been?
That would have been amazing.
Bob Hoskins popped in and popped out of Heather's life.
And you could kind of imagine that story, like this American person who'd been in and had an affair with your mum or whatever and was coming back to see.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that would have been incredible.
No, it was good. The other person as well who wanted to ask if I could... I don't know why I'm laughing. The other person who asked me if I could ask EastEnders if they could play my dad was Lionel Blair.
Oh, wow!
Oh, which Lionel I love Lionel Blair. I mean, I've done Come Dine With Me with him and things like this, but and I've sort of seen him at things, but out of Bob Hoskins and Lionel Blair, I would have, you know, I think Bob would have been better.
Yeah, both. I mean, both very different characters.
Very different. But
both would have been amazing. That's such a shame.
Yeah, I know. And I love Lionel, you know, and, either way, you know, whatever happened, it didn't happen, so there we go.
But. It didn't happen. So Heather, she became an instantly popular character, because it, first of all, it wasn't your first time in EastEnders, was it? I've read that you were a friend of Mo, first of all.
Yes, I was.
A different character.
Yeah, 2 years previously, I'd been, when Kat Slater had come back into EastEnders, when Jessie had come back after having her daughter, she was discovered in a prison.
I remember that.
She was discovered by Mo, Big Mo, who came to visit me, her friend in prison, and basically Kat sort of appeared in it. So I was sort of a friend of Big Mo's in prison with Kat, and I played this this sort of quite butch big woman prison inmate. And then
up to 2 years later.
Yeah, 2 years later, Heather Trott pops up, the character. And, you know, it was just one of those really amazing moments when I'd been going at the same time for some auditions for Dame Edna Everidge tour and to play his sidekick, sort of Madge, on tour. And I'd been going to, workshops after auditions. And then I got the news one day that I didn't get the... You know, after all these many months of auditions for Barry Humphries doing his tour, I got the news I didn't get it. But I'd been up for EastEnders, and the next day I got EastEnders, and it was like it was kind of almost meant to be. Do you know what I mean? It was one of those.
I think in life that is my rule. Actually, it's meant to be, because sometimes you don't get jobs, and like then you get another one, and you think, God, I never would have been able to do this if I had taken that. So it's always
absolutely.
But it's amazing you came, so we know it does anything. But when you came back as Heather, first of all, a guest character, and then obviously she became so popular. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a relationship. So basically they were sidekicks, weren't they, Shirley and Heather? I mean, that relationship was instant and amazing with Linda Hembury. Was that quite quick to develop between you two?
Yeah, I mean, I she'd obviously been in Bad Girls for a very long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, she did as well. Yeah,
that's right. So she'd left, came to EastEnders. I did a very small part in Bad Girls once she'd left it. So and I obviously knew all her work about My Beautiful Thing, and you know, I knew her obviously of her work, and I was a little bit scared of her.
Yeah,
yeah, and I sort of remember my first day going in, at the time, I sort of, this is bizarre, but at the time I kind of started smoking, only a little bit, like a little bit bizarre. And then when I went in there, I thought, no, I'm not going to be smoking because it's not, I don't like it really, and it's not really me. And I remember going in, and when I first went in, there's a sort of veranda that people stand out on outside the reception.
Making it sound very nice, the veranda.
Please
get bit there. There are stairs.
Some steps to go into a porter cabin that you can slip on if it's a bit icy.
Yeah.
And she was standing there having a cigarette, and I'd gone in and I said, "Oh, hello." And she said, "Hello, you're Cheryl." And you know, I said, "Yes." I hadn't met her before then.
Wow.
No, it was really bizarre. And then she just leaned over the bar and she went, "Do you want a fag?" And I said, "Yeah, all right." And that kind of was how we sort of cemented our sort of on-off friendship. Do you know what I mean? On-off friendship, on screen and off screen. But you know, and we become really good mates, and you know, off screen and on screen. I think it EastEnders at the time, I think, was very good at having those kind of duos. They had Minty and Gareth.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They had the comedy kind of elements, but it was a very nice piece of writing. There's lots of lovely directing going on at the time. It was just, for me, it was a period. I think all soaps, all dramas have their ups and down times, and I think you can look at something and remember periods of times in soaps, and then there's other times you can't, it's a little
you
bit
can't really wishy-washy. Yeah. I mean, we were there together at the same time, and it was around the TV fight. I think it was a magical time. It was. Yeah, the comedy, you had the drama, you had the legends, because there's not many legends left now.
No, and you know, you had your Barbara Windsors, you had your Pam St. Clements, you know, you had amazing guest people, which I mean they do have now as well. But you know, David Essex coming in and playing, you know. Something.
I know. I remember the women were swooning, weren't they? Anywhere you went, middle-aged women were fainting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a bit of a, you know, and I mean, never forget Linda Henry making me sing.
Songs.
With a guitar, in front of him. I just thought, oh, Linda, you just haven't quite got it, have you? You don't do that. It's like, you know, singing Angels in front of Robbie Williams or something. You just can't do it. It's nothing you would do. You know, there I was trying to do a Hold Me Close on the guitar, and
I felt like
your mum had gone.
You said about Linda. Yeah. I was the same, because I was scared. I mean, I was literally scared of everyone, because you walk in, Linda Henry, I knew from My Beautiful Thing and loads of things. Barbara, obviously, I didn't kind of know Barbara, but Pam St. Clement, I remember being petrified by it first.
Yes.
It was just Pat Butcher walking up to you. Brown, Doc Cotton. I grew up with them. It's nerve-wracking that first day at Borehamwood, isn't it, when you go in?
It is. It is quite funny, because I sort of vowed, really, to myself, and on every job, really, after that, that I would make sure that whoever was coming in for a new job, for anything that I was already in, whether it was just a day guest appearance or a young person working, or I would try to really engage with them, so that they went away going, "I've had a lovely day. Oh, and that person was really nice to me." Because that's what sticks in my head. Who literally made the effort? Do you know what I mean? And who kind of had been there so long that they didn't? It was just like another. It was a factory, and I know they call it the factories and things. But at the same time, it's where some absolute magic can be created, and yeah. people. And also, I don't. You know, I'm such an upbeat person. I can't bear sort of negativity or people moaning about it. I know within every sort of institution that you work for, it doesn't matter whether it's in our industry or in a factory or yeah. A fast food shop, whatever it is, you're going to have your days where you just can't stop moaning about that or the people up above and all that. I get it, but at the same time, in our profession, I really understood how privileged and blessed and humble I was for being there. And I couldn't bear sometimes hearing stuff. That literally make me put my fingers in my ear and go, la, la, la. Do you know what I mean? Because I just thought, why would you do that? That must be just familiarity and too much, you know, and not,
I think
not
it's
sort of...
Yeah, it's like you're being at school. It's like you're there for so long, some people, that it does drive that. But you're so right. It's so good that you said that about making, because I think a lot of people, it's not that people are horrible. It's just that they forget new people are there. Do you know what I mean? It's like you don't think of, and I always thought that. I always, I did it for any new directors coming, because I knew how I felt. Because directors,
yes.
I mean, it's not, but basically most directors don't really like each other, because when I came in it, because everyone's taking a job that they would have had. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember doing
I know and there's kind of like not hierarchies, but there's kind of things where it is a bit like that actually reminds me of something very funny, but it's that thing of if you're confident in what you do, you don't need to prove what you can do. Do you know what I mean? There were some people whose work was brilliant, but I would call it barking. They would bark, 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 bark. And you kind of go, why are you bark? You don't need to bark, because your whole sort of CV, as it were, says, and even if it doesn't say anything on it, and it's completely blank, nobody will judge you for it unless you are just going to make complete balls up of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that, and a lot of people who I thought might struggle a little bit, they would maybe be very good with their first ADs and things, or second ADs. You know, they would actually sort of have those good meetings and not believe that they were the only thing that kept it sort of together. Do you know what I mean? And it's a massive responsibility. I mean, the directing, you know, if you get it, you know, you get it right, nobody really praises you, but if you get it wrong, you'll certainly get, you know,
actors
get away with murder, don't they?
Actors, I think, are the faces. You carry it all. So if a show's going through a bad patch, actors get blamed. Do you know what I mean? It's not really anyone else's
But then that's down to people liking certain characters. They can go, oh, I don't like that, because they don't like that character. Not that they don't like that actor or whatever.
Yeah, true, but I think true.
If they turn around and go, oh my gosh, did you see that way that was shot? It was all shaky.
Yeah,
And they were all, I mean, that and all that made me feel sick watching that, you know, or whatever. And then that's the kind of feedback that I think obviously is what the director gets in the neck. Do you know what I mean? For me, what I saw was like, okay, the ones that were pretty chilled out, the ones who would allow you to have a little license within their what they've planned, were the ones that got the best results. The ones
I've always thought you have to do that. I think it's a team effort on set. I've always thought that's correct. You've got your ideas, but you need everyone to. And when you're doing, I mean, I remember we did quite a few things. I remember doing Ronnie's wedding, which was like everyone there, and it's like it is like controlling. Yeah. What I found is that you become a headmaster, because it's almost like controlling school kids, because we all know this is no detriment to actors, but when you're doing weddings and stuff, it's like being at school, because everyone is a bit bored. Everyone's messing around. It's like, oh my God.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great example, because, you know, weddings, funerals, anything where there's large crowds, a lot of actors tend to get very bored easily, so they'll kind of mess around. And you do need, you're absolutely right, you do need somebody quite stern at the helm then to guide these.
Well, I was always jealous, because I just wanted to be having fun with everyone. That's what I always want to do.
I know.
Right, we're going to kick off with a EastEnders Pointless Facts game, which I've found some facts, I know. So this is more that you probably won't know, but some take home for people at home. I find these quite amazing. So do you know, to the nearest million, what the highest rated episode got ever for EastEnders?
Oh, now let me think, because I don't get that many nowadays.
No,
but
no.
There's lots of reasons for that. I would say 13 or 14 million.
Oh, you got it bang on, first of all. 30 million, yeah. Watch Dirty wow. Den handing divorce papers to Andy on Christmas Day 1986.
And I was one of them. I was one of those.
Yeah, I think I was one of them. I mean, that's at 30 million now. I mean, yeah. You know, I think Line of Duty was the last thing in our country to get the biggest rating, yeah. Which was 15.6 or something. But this, I mean, but when you were there, I mean, we were getting watched, I think, when we were there about, I think it was about 8 million-ish, which is still loads. I mean, do you feel that pressure when you go into a show like that? Because obviously I've spoken to so many people on the show and it's mm-hmm. like now I'm sure you still get recognised for Heather because of the yeah. magnitude of that show.
Yeah, I mean, I think, things like ratings, I didn't really care about that. Was for the higher people to know whether they were doing it right or not. I mean, and there was a lot of different factors to that, wasn't there? Because the whole format of how soaps are nowadays are so different to how they were when I was doing it, as to how it was even in Dirty Den days. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that whole format of how it's been produced, how it's been put on our screens, along with digital telly now, along with catch up, along with all those things that have changed everything. The whole viewing thing, I think, is like what one big melting pot of the minute.
No one sits, no one plans. You know, you don't circle the Radio Times anymore and think, right, at 7:30 every day, I'm going to watch BBC One. It just does not happen.
No. And there was kind of only sort of four or five channels, weren't there, at the beginning?
Yeah. I watch less telly now because it's like, you know, if you get given a big meal and I get put off a bit if there's a big meal.
Yeah.
I watch less telly because I'm so scared by how much there is.
Yes, I know. And also, you know, not being rude or nothing, but how much drivel there is. I don't know how we are becoming, do you know what I mean, as a society to kind of...
When we talked about
it soap... It feeds itself, doesn't it? It just feeds itself in that respect. I hold my hand up. I've done a reality. So, you know, it's not about, oh, there's too many realities, there's too many this and blah, blah, blah.
No. I think if there's a need for something, there's a need for something. But I think the big... And this is a big issue we've talked about with different people about soap is I think a lot of soap... I mean, I love soap. That's why we do the podcast. I'm championing them all. But... there's a lack of patriarchs and matriarchs now because a lot of the older generation have gone and younger people don't tend to want to stay in a show that long. So where will be kind of the Angies and the Pams and Clements and the Barbara Windsors? And also it's like they for me, so it's tried to compete in a way now with films and stuff. I mean, it's just been, you know, there's the events, the big stunts are so big. And you're like, is it taking it too far away from the original kitchen sink drama that soap was supposed to be? Do you know what I mean? Where you had great characters and they could talk about the spider on the wall and it would be brilliant.
Well, I mean, it's really, I think, personally, I think that some of it is about how real it really is and how much do people want to watch real stuff, or compared to escapism or whatever. So I was gripped by soaps like Brookside in the early day. I mean, I'm talking because I'm older, of an older generation, but Brookside, one of the first, to me, nitty-gritty dramas.
Groundbreaking.
And EastEnders, Arthur stealing like the thingy funds, you know, the Christmas
That was the big stunt, wasn't it, Baze? That was the
amazing.
Big
amazing. Yeah. And you just but that was kind of the reality of the day that was that was what was like heartbreaking and we could relate to it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how much we do relate to. I mean, I know the world is, you know, there are people blowing people up, there are people doing all sorts of things. I know everything has to move on, and I get that, but I'm just wondering because we rely on watching soaps and knowing that, you know, somebody else's life might be a bit better on there than our, you know, or worse. So you kind of, I think, going too much into the sort of big action movies, we can do that. We you know, it depends on how we want to sort of rebuild our society, I think. And I think if we just keep following massive blockbuster movie type things in a soap, I don't think we would lose.
It's never going to look as good because the money's not there. Do you know what I mean? No. So yeah. I think they just need to go. I think it needs to be character, character, character. And I think that, say for EastEnders, where's the Heather now? Where's the comedy kind of, where is that double acting now? And it doesn't really exist. And I think you need it. You need to have everything in that mix, don't you? Because you had our point when I mean, I'm not saying this because of us, but it just seemed that the period where I was there, everything was covered. You kind of had, you know, you had Jesse and Shane, that chemistry is amazing. You had the Mitchells, you had the Butchers, you had Shirley and you. I mean, because Linda, I think, has, you know, not been on screen half as much since you've been gone.
No. And I think they don't. I think in a way, sometimes when they do that, when they sort of damage things, and I think it was a damage case because, and that's not just me saying, well, you know, I wanted to stay in it because I would have stayed in it, but it's not about that. I think what happens is that they think there's some ideas that just don't hit right. Do you know what I mean? And so, and I think, you know, I mean, I love all the soaps. You know, I'm a bit like you, Lee. So I will go, why is Corrie and sometimes Emmerdale, how come they've kept those wonderful characters for quite a long time that are grounded, that, like you said, that are going now? But, you know, your Ritas in the old day, and all that lot, and your Pat Phoenixes, you know, all of that. Where are the mixture was equal, you know, you had the comedy, you had the seriousness, you had the issues, you had all of those things. And I think, if you can get the chemistry absolutely right with the actors that are in it, and that, not saying you can't move on and have other actors in it or younger people or whatever.
Keep them if it's working.
Absolutely. I don't see the point in fixing something that's not broken.
Totally.
Unless they've run out of ideas, or unless they really can't go any further, or the actor wants to leave. Do you know what I mean?
We've now revealed Lionel Blair or Bob Hoskins were there, so it could have gone further.
Absolutely.
Easily. But right, next question. Which location in Albert Square have most people died?
Which location on Albert Square? Yeah, well, it's so got to be by the Christmas tree or something, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's outside the Queen Vic, so near. Apparently, most people have died. I mean, I remember Bradley squashed.
Well, the live one. Yeah, the live. That was a live, wasn't it? I remember that.
Where he got squashed outside. Yeah. And the Vic, I mean, the Vic itself, I mean, I've said this on the podcast quite a few times, but when you, the pub is probably the most exciting place to see when you get there. You're like, wow, it's the Queen Vic. But then it's the most unexciting place to film, isn't it? Because you're like, oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes where there isn't any, where it's kind of like pretend alcohol and pretend stuff like that, there's quite a lot of fruit flies around.
Oh, right. Was it real beer, by the way, in the Vic?
I don't think it is now. No, it wasn't. It wasn't anything like that. And also, I mean, a lot of people, there was good advice given to me, which was try to make sure you don't have a drink that has a colour in it. So have vodka and tonic or gin, you know what I mean? Then you could have water.
Tonic. Otherwise, whiskey, they put some burnt sugar or something in it.
And the same with, you know, the bottles of beer and things in bottles and stuff. And so I was always like, you know, it's a bit like when they made up Heather 80s drinks, which were woo-woos and goodness knows what.
Oh God, I mean, what was it like?
I must have just been bouncing around the walls with the amount of, whatever, e-numbers.
Sugar, oh my God, yeah. And food as well. The big thing, I mean, I used to love dipping in for a chip or something, but what I love is when people cook meals, it's basically the props team getting some awful microwave meals and heating them up. And they're disgusting, aren't they?
Yeah. And you're sort of doing that thing of, well, I was always thinking, because obviously at the beginning, because I did sort of talk to them about Heather, and I said, look, you know, I know she's a big woman, I'm a big woman, and you know, obviously Heather's a big girl, but I think you've got to have more layers to her than eating, and if she is comfort eating, you've got to find out why she's doing it.
Yeah,
totally. So I don't want to be sat there just all the way through eating crisps, eating chips, eating thingy for no reason. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't seem right. But having said that, I don't know if I can reveal this, but I'm going to.
I'm excited.
No, it's just one of those things. It's so important to keep him with the props people.
Oh, yes, totally.
And all of them. Because if you fancied a bit of toast, I'd go, could you Hey, Jill, make me a bit of toast, would you? Do you know what I mean? I fancy a bit. He'd go, oh, I'll go, go on, just give me some. Me and Linda would go, a bit of toast and do you want anything? Like, no, just butter, just toast and butter. So we could just demand those
things. Oh, yeah, they used to bring me chips into the gallery.
Yeah.
With some garlic salt on. Oh, I'm thinking of it now. Yeah, it's making coffee. Oh, I used to love them. Props boys are the people that you need to get. Yeah, there's layers of people to get on side.
Yeah, in the crew, to be quite honest with you, more than the actors, if anything.
Totally. Your sound, they're the ones who make you look good, sound good. Yeah.
Yeah, everything, all of those. You know, in fact, when I got married to my husband and I had my big do, which was a sort of OK magazine thing, I didn't invite some of the cast, but I invited all of the crew.
That's brilliant.
Tuxedos and things, and it was just, and they'd never been like invited to one of these sort of posh wedding things. And I said, no, I said, because you know, and it was just this amazing pictures of all the sound and the camera people and the thing with, and the theme was black and white, so they could wear black or white. And they were all there, and they just all dressed up rather than in their jeans and t-shirts,
their shorts, crew are always in shorts.
Exactly, and the prop boys were there, and it was just really, really good time. But like you said, you know, I think I dreaded, I loved and I dreaded the Christmas episodes because the amount of Christmas dinners that you went through before Christmas, when the real Christmas came, we were all off, weren't we, on holidays?
Oh yeah,
I never had a Christmas dinner on Christmas when I was at EastEnders.
No, because I've done it. It ruined Christmas, didn't it? Christmas has come back to me since soap, because you've done, you know, I've done so many Christmas episodes where you got, I mean, it's amazing, say at Emmerdale, where you've got the fake snow and the village is coming.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
And you've got the, you know, Salvation Army singing in September.
Yes.
And then by the time you start putting out the tree, you're like, well, I feel like Christmas is over.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm
celebrating it.
You know, yeah, my husband's Moroccan, so yeah, we would always go off to Morocco in the 2 weeks we had off, because it was like, yeah, just get a bit of sun now.
We've done it here. Yeah, next question. Which member of Take That appeared in Albert Square?
Robbie Williams.
Yes. Did you meet him?
No, he wasn't when I was in it, but no.
Oh, I didn't know whether that was your time when he was there, because Boris Johnson was in it as well.
Well, they've all popped in.
I know.
George Michael came to the square as well, but not when I was there before. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out who popped in when I was there. I can't remember.
I can't remember if we had anyone.
Did we have the Queen at one point?
I think the Queen visited. I'm not sure whether she was. I don't think she's ever been in.
I don't mean she's been on the soap. Can you imagine that?
Queen, do you want to be a supporting artist in a soap?
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Well,
that's
the best story about her is in Emmerdale when she visited Emmerdale and they blew up like they'd set up the post office to kind of blow up as a stunt.
Yes.
For her. And it blew up, and literally, she's the only person, and it kind of went further than they expected, and kind of bits landed near her, and apparently she didn't flinch.
Oh, my, amazing.
I know, Emmerdale killing off the Queen, can you imagine? Right, the pointless fact's over, we're going to get onto a potted history of Heather by kind of means of a quiz, so to whiz through the storylines a bit quicker.
Because this is such fun.
I mean, I tried to make it, I go through everything, and I think, because otherwise it's just like a quite, you know, it's quite dull, so I thought, let's make fun. So, whose wedding was Heather asked to be bridesmaid at soon after arriving? It's who she kind of fell in love with in the end.
I wasn't bridesmaid at I fell in love with. I think I'm right.
I've got it as Hazel and Minty.
Well, no, because they didn't get married.
But I think, didn't they not? And then you married it. You were in part of a competition, a competition. And so I think
I was going to be bridesmaid. And then Hazel went off and didn't marry. They didn't get married. And I married him.
And you married him, yeah. And then
I married Minty for the competition.
But then you didn't consummate the marriage, so you split up, which I love. I mean, yeah, always, that's the way it's got to be. But then that carried on, didn't it? Because when Mitchell came back years later, Minty was still there. So it's quite nice to have that long-running thing, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think I was a bridesmaid or something. Oh, no. I mean, do you know what? I can't remember.
Everyone's the same. You know what, actors? You learn your lines for that day and it kind of goes into a memory bank that's not remembered. So it's like...
I can see costumes in my head. So I can see me at a wedding in a sort of...
You can't do this, a blurry vision of who it was.
shirt with a red cardigan on. And I think it could have been someone like Jane Bill, or being Bill and Jane. It was an unexpected place that I was at as a wedding.
It wasn't. It wasn't the one we did. It wasn't. You're not thinking of Ronnie's wedding, are you, with Jack?
No. Well, no. Hang on. Yes, it could have been that one.
I remember. I think you did have Barbara Windsor and I.
Barbara Windsor and I got flat. No. It might have been. What do you call it?
Oh yeah, because Barbara wasn't there for that one.
No, but Barbara and I got flashed at by a flasher on location, and there's a picture somewhere up online of Barbara. I was linking arms with Barbara, we were walking along, and this guy must have organised it, and he came out from behind a tree and completely flashed at us.
Oh my God!
A pap took the picture, so he'd obviously set it up. Security kind of jumped on him, and Barbara turned around and she just didn't blink an eye. And I was a little bit shocked, and she didn't blink an eye. And she went, "Oh, he didn't have much to show, did he, darling?" And that was somebody's wedding where I think I was wearing this dress. And
that is amazing. Oh, God bless Barbara. I mean,
I
love that someone went to the effort to kind of organize a pap to be there as he flashed.
I know. And you can see it. There are pictures online where there's somebody, he's tried to take this, and the man's being accosted in the background, and me and Barbara are walking away. It's very funny.
Oh my God, that's amazing. So why, next question, why did Heather slap Shirley in R&R?
Oh, because she'd set her up with somebody to go out with or give her a kiss or something.
Yeah, with a stripper.
Yes, that was it.
No less.
Yes.
Now, I remember having a stripper in one of my scenes. It's the most excruciating thing ever, actually, because I think we'd cast someone who they are kind of strippers in real life, but they get so nervous. And then you're like, God, this must be the most awful thing in the world to have to come onto an EastEnders set with all the women, famous women.
But Lee, I've got a famous story about a stripper at my one of my Hindus on EastEnders.
Oh, right.
Which is really, I mean, it's very funny. So I was I had to go back a bit. But basically, I was at a Pete Andre concert with my cousin. And Pete had very kindly arranged for her to come. She's a very big fan of his. Anyway, So we went
to... Yeah, we all are. We love Pete Andre, exactly, mysterious
exactly.
girl, yeah.
So exactly. So we went to this concert in Brighton, and he was with his lovely wife, Emily, just not long married Emily. But all the kids came. Junior came, and Princess came and stuff. Anyway, Vista came. And we were... We went back to the... to meet them all. And this... Katie Price was there with her then-husband, Kieran.
Oh, God.
So there was a whole sort of kind of weird thing with all these people there. Yeah. Anyway, and Pete's brothers and stuff. Anyway, so I didn't know. Anyway, Kieran came up to me and he went, in front of Katie, he said, "Oh, I don't suppose you recognise me with my clothes on."
And I
was completely like, "What? Sorry, I don't..." You know, and I felt a bit embarrassed. And I was like...
Yeah, like, have we slept together?
And there wouldn't have been that one. Anyway, and Katie was giving me... Bryce, he was giving me a look, and I said, "I'm so sorry, Kieran, I have no idea what you're talking about." And he went, no, yes, you do. You know, you remember me, I took my clothes off for you." And I went, I'm so sorry. And he went, "I was your stripper in when you were getting your hen stripper." And apparently he was the stripper that I had at my hen party.
That's amazing.
And it was him. But I just thought, well, I don't remember that. I don't remember him. I mean, because to be quite honest, they're very embarrassing.
They're embarrassing in real life, let alone then at least in real life, you're normally a bit drunk. So on set,
but Linda Henry used to make them. I mean, she was very funny. Linda would, completely almost try to embarrass them. Do you know what I mean?
She would. I remember it. She was great at jigging everyone on, actually, because I just remember it being the most excruciating thing. And you're giving this guy... kind of, you're directing this guy who's just stood in like a Speedos or something. It's like,
I know. And we got to put oil all over him or something, or sit on his lap or something. And you, or you just go, oh.
I mean, it's not a bad day at work. Look, we can't complain, can we? It's not like working on the roads. But that led basically to someone following her to the loo, which obviously got revealed. I mean, what I love is you were part of the best whodunit ever in 2009. Basically, who slept with Heather?
Who's like, yeah, who was the baby daddy, wasn't it?
Who was the baby daddy is what they said, but it's basically like who's in the toilet?
Who stuck George Michael's butt, yeah. yogurt pot lid underneath the toilet door?
Which is brilliant. I love it. And then obviously it was revealed as Darren, which was a shock. I mean, it was. How far in advance did you know it was going to be Darren?
Oh, goodness me. I remember the scripts because you do, when there's something quite big like that, they leave pages of script out of the script so you can't see. So the people don't know what they're doing. And obviously only the people who know the real thing. It's like anything, you know, we don't know what's going on after time. So but I remember them telling me and thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know what the reaction's going to be to this, because Darren was a very young man, do you know what I mean, and in it, and obviously of consent age and an adult, but he was much younger than Heather. And it was just the most bizarre kind of pairing, like the most unexpected of what you would ever think that would happen, to any of the characters, you know. And then there was sort of a bet of who had done this to Heather, who'd got her up the duff, as it were. And you kind of think, oh my gosh, I don't know.
Who else was in the running?
Right. Well, there was Patrick.
Patrick. Oh, that would be amazing.
There was Patrick. There was Minty.
There was Phil Mitchell. Yeah.
And there was,
I think I remember thinking it was Phil.
Yeah, Darren. And then, of course, in the betting office, they also had Wellard. as part of it, was it Wellard? But I do remember.
I mean, it probably was.
Yeah, I do remember going
literally
to
Wellard.
Well, I don't know. You know, as I could never tell. I mean, to be quite honest with you, the R&R toilets were so small. I actually wouldn't have known how Heather. I mean, you've been in those toilets,
she wouldn't have even seen it.
If you're a big girl and you go in a toilet, you can hardly just shut the door behind you, let alone have two people in it. But anyway.
So did you know? When did you know? Kind of before? How far advanced when you were filming? Did you know? Kind of it was Darren.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't too early on, to be quite honest, because I was even sort of thinking, you know, what's going on? And I don't know if they'd made their mind up, to be quite honest. I think they were sort of playing a little bit out to see what would happen, and then obviously at the last minute sort of wrote it. But I even remember getting stopped because obviously, as you know, Lee, EastEnders. You could have very early. They used to call Linda and I the banker, and I have to say this thing: the bankers. And that's a B, not a W. They used to call us B, the bankers, because we'd come in early. They'd have us in early to film scenes because we could whack through them, and then they'd put us the last scenes of the day to catch up for the ones that were a bit slow.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, but in the end, we cottoned on to that. And went, no, I'm not having this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get other people. I remember getting up very early to go to work, and I used to commute every day and pick Linda up from Southeast London all the way up to Boreham Wood every day in the car.
Wow.
And I'd stop and get me petrol station up the road. And it was obviously early hours of the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning or something, to get ready to get there. And I remember going into this garage, and when you go in, I've got me little coffee, do you know what I mean? Got me little latte, got me whatever, and me early morning sandwich for later on down the line.
Oh, I used to have a chicken and mushroom slice when I was there in the morning.
I'll get you. It's all based around food with you, isn't it?
I'm so showbiz. Chicken and mushroom slice of M&S. Go on, sorry.
I know. No, I was just saying, but the police used to use that as an early morning place to go and get their coffees and things. So you'd have about four police cars just sort of there, and your car, and that was it. And I remember going into it, and it was a garage that had an M&S. I don't know if we say that, but anyway, I was like, an M&S garage, blah, 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 all that sort of thing. And this policeman went, oh, hello, it's Ever Trot. And I went, oh, hello. You know, I thought, oh, gosh, you. And he went, right, so
who's the dad?
And who's the dad? And I went, well, I said, I'm really sorry. I can't tell you, because if I tell you, I'll have to cut my tongue out. You know, we sign acts for this. And he went, no. He goes, look, you know, we're policemen. You can tell us who it is. And I went, I can't. I really can't. There was about three other policemen with him, and they went, "Oh, leave her alone," sort of thing. And this guy got it in his bonnet, and he basically it'd be in his bonnet, and he went, No, he goes, you can tell us who it is. You ain't leaving. He went to the bloke behind him, shut the doors.
Oh my God, wow.
And he went, now you can tell us who it is. And I went, I'm really sorry, I can't. And the others were a bit embarrassed and they went, no, you've got to let her go now. And he was getting a little bit like, honestly, this policeman. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't. I said, and the more you're trying to keep me here, the more I'm going to be late for work. I said, and I'm sorry, if you carry on, I'm going to have to report you, mate. And he didn't like that. And the next thing, he went out the doors, and he went out. He was walking around my car, looking at my car, checking me number.
Wow. Oh, and he wanted to bring you in for something, probably.
Absolutely. Just because I would not divulge the information to
him. That is the power of EastEnders. Absolutely.
Exactly. And the other three looked at me and went, we're so sorry. And I went, it's fine. I said, can you just get him, I need to go to work now, you know.
I mean, worrying about this police officer, whoever you are. I mean,
long time ago now. Yeah, it's now I've been out for a long time.
Final question, because I want to get to you as well. So whizzing through some other storylines. So I love Heather because a lot of the time she went through a lot of the doom and gloom for a while as well, rather than comedy, because you were money problems and fell unconscious with the gas or whatever. And then who did she start accidentally dating online?
Who did I accidentally date online?
He had a profile and it was revealed who was behind this profile.
Oh, do you know what? That's very good because I can't remember.
It was Ben Mitchell.
Was it really?
Yeah. Oh,
Ben Mitchell.
He was using a fake account. That's what I mean. That was the start of her downfall, really, back then.
Oh, so I remember sort of meeting other people who were like onliners or not onliners or sad little dates that she'd been set up for or not, but I don't know because she got very excited about this, didn't she? She wanted to.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. She went to find who it was, and I think
yes,
and they tried to cover it up, and I can't quite remember.
Yeah, but I think this other guy was a mechanic who sat and had some sandwiches, yes, but it wasn't him or something.
Yeah,
I vaguely remember a day shooting with this lad who basically had to say sorry, it's not me, and he was very nice, but Heather was obviously obsessed with who it was online, do you know what I mean?
Ben, obviously, well, not poor Ben, Ben Mitchell, who kind of, the thing with Ben Mitchell, and this is a thing that I do think is a bit silly, is that I can never get Ben Mitchell in my head because it has been played by so many people.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It's changed again now.
And I think I've had three of the Ben Mitchells. I remember young Charlie Jones, who was the younger one, who when Heather and Ben and Heather became sort of good friends, didn't they? He was very...
Yes, like,
He could come out as a young man.
That was a nice little pairing, actually. Yeah,
with his like musicals, and she would help encourage his musicals where Phil Mitchell didn't want him to be into his musicals. So Heather would kind of be there and go to auditions with him and do things with him. So they were like, it was sad because he was a friend growing up, and then I had another lad, And I think he was the one who like killed me. I might have had two or three. I can't remember. But
that was obviously, I think I was there when it happened. I didn't direct those episodes. But I mean, when you got told that, like we said, it's not news that you didn't want to go. I mean, it was there, you know, they come in.
But
was it a shock? Because I mean, I think I remember being really shocked because, like we said earlier, the record wasn't broken. So why try to fix it? It was an amazing partnership. There was so much more. And it was the only comedy really left in EastEnders, to be honest. So were you kind of totally shocked, especially to be murdered as well, because it means you can never come back, which is silly, like Pamson Kevin dying in it.
Yes, absolutely. Now I remember sort of, because we always used to go up every now and again, I think it was like maybe once a month or something like that, to go and hear our storylines for what was happening next. Or we'd have that little thing thinking, are we going to be culled? The culling is happening. They're going to stop people or they're going to enhance your storyline. And at the time, I was plodding along quite nicely. So I didn't sort of have an inkling that I might be, that might happen to me. So like I said, every day I would take Linda Henry to work and we come home together if we're in scenes all day together. So Linda sat down waiting in the car and I'd gone up for my what I thought was what was happening to Heather Trotnick in the next few months meeting. And I remember going in, but then I remember thinking, oh, it was a Friday afternoon. It was the last of the day. Everybody's gone home. That's a bit odd. You know what I mean? I don't know why. You know, it's the weekend to kind of get over it.
Oh, and, yeah, yeah. They probably on a Friday, yeah.
Yeah, so that, well, there's that, and there's a Saturday night call you're waiting for to see if you're in the papers the next day on Sunday if you've done something naughty, which I had, but you get those phone calls, people waiting, and suddenly you know they get a phone call saying, "Well, you're in the News of the World or something tomorrow morning," and that was a Saturday night call. You'd be waiting for that, but so Friday I'd gone in, and it was Brian Kirkwood was the producer then at that time, and he was visibly quite upset. And I just thought, oh, and I kind of had a little thing in my heart thinking, do you know what? I don't think this is going to bode well, this meeting. You know, it was, but he was actually quite upset. And he basically then said, look, really, really sorry, but, there are some other characters that we need to enhance, and sometimes we have to make sacrifices for that to happen and to see how it changes the other character. And basically, you know, you're out. And I was like, okay, thank you very much for having me. Yeah, thank you for having me all this time. You know, I was only supposed to be in a few episodes, and here I am nearly 5 years later. Thank you. And then I said, do you know what's happening, how I'm going? And he said, and that's when he said, well, yeah, we are going to kill you off. And I was like, ooh, that's quite, he said, it'll be a very big storyline, whatever. And I said, fantastic. I said, that's nice. And then I remember I said to him, and which of course is your instinct, and as myself as a mother as well, which was, how long have I got so that I can get to prepare myself for some more work?
Yeah.
And a lot of people who get taken out of a soap, they tend to maybe only have about 6 or 8 weeks, maybe 10 or something like that, a couple of months maybe at the most. But EastEnders gave me about 6 months. So I was there.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah, it was really good. So it gave my agent a lot of time to look for other stuff and things. But then, it was a bittersweet thing, because the day that I was told that I was leaving EastEnders was the day that my husband, because like I said, he's Moroccan, had got his visa to come to England. So we'd had the brilliant news in the daytime, and I was really celebrating, going, "This is fantastic! Home office, you know, he'll be here. He can come. Amazing. We can live together." Spouse, husband and wife, as we should be, blah blah blah. How wonderful our life will be, blah blah blah. And then literally that evening it was like, oh dear. But it is what it is. It was what it was, and I'm always forever grateful for playing Heather, because it gave me many opportunities. It still does sometimes.
Yeah, and you've left a stamp on history, I think, which is great with a program like that. You know, like we all know, we've done bits in that's left a stamp in history. So,
absolutely.
The nation loved Heather. Let's move on to you to finish. So, I mean, being serious as well. So for someone like you said, Heather was a big girl. You're a bigger lady. I mean, if in the acting world, if you're not a Julia Roberts or Jenna Coleman, I mean, is there still prejudice out there? Is it quite, I know some people will always get the comedy character or whatever. Has it got kind of better over the years?
Well, I've always played, weirdly, I was thinking about this the other day, because I like people to take a bit of a chance. I like casting directors and people to take a bit of a chance where they would put you for something else, something different. And it kind of started when I was doing pantos, because I was always playing the sort of lovable Heather fairy type characters in pantos.
Yeah.
And I thought, please, somebody give me a chance and let me play something wicked. And the moment that I was allowed to play wicked characters, people could then go, she can be a little bit nasty. You know, she could quite easily play anything from Misery. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and as an actor, you just would love to have those. I mean, that's the great thing about something like a soap, isn't it? I don't know if anybody else would have said this, but you have your Hamlet moment and you have your spear carrying.
Totally. You get to play so much stuff.
Absolutely. All the emotions, the whole gambit. There's not a job that you can't do that on. Unlike a soap. Do you know
but
what
I would love Panto. I would love you to play Cinderella, for instance. Do you know what I mean?
And well, really that's what I'm saying. Exactly. So, I mean, I think, you know, they should shake it all up anyway, to be quite honest.
Yeah,
with you,
yeah.
Those things. But I remember sort of, it's being that sort of coming away from something like EastEnders, where people always expect you to be like that. It takes a long time for people to think of you being somebody else, and that happens quite a lot. You know, I mean, I still speak to Anita Dobson, and they still call her Angie. And
it doesn't matter. She will always be, won't she? Whatever she does, she'll always be. There's only certain people who can. I mean, I think If I was going to say now what I've learned over the years, it's like, say, Kath Tilsley, who played Eva in Corrie, the minute she left, she was able to dye her hair brown. And I think that just, if you got that, but if you've kind of, if you've gone in not thinking of those things, which most people don't, do you know what I mean? You just let makeup and hair have control. And actually now I'd be like, oh God, I want to totally change my hair. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. So I look totally different on screen as that character.
Yeah. I mean, without giving anything away, and I can't, unfortunately, give anything away, I've just finished filming a Netflix series, and I can't talk about it, unfortunately, at the moment, which I'd love to come back on when I can.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think it would, it's going to dispel a lot of the Heather myth. And I think it kind of, it won't, it will never put her to bed properly, because I don't think it
you know, it can't in some people's minds. No, in some people's minds, yeah.
But it will all, but you will see another side alongside something else that's coming out this Christmas, alongside a BBC thing that I've just done, which I can talk about, called Dodger, which is sort of it's a series based around Oliver Twist and Fagin's gang and Dodger's gang, and it's got the wonderful Chris Eccleston playing Fagin.
Brilliant.
It's got the most amazing cast, and my character that I played, I was a guest in one of the series, one of the episodes, sorry, and a sort of full time. In it as a the housekeeper of like a Downton type house.
Oh, you know, brilliant.
But she wonderful, and she interacts with the Dodger, and she does, you know, and she's, but she's also a bit of a gossip, and she goes to the pub and she lets a little bit too much gossip go. Do you know what I mean? It's quite, but there were people like, you know, doing scenes with Alexis Sale and
that's brilliant. And what's that called?
It's called Dodger, and that comes out next year. It's a series for the BBC on
which will be CBBC. Because I'll reveal to the audience that we're not live. So this is, we're actually recording way before Christmas, and you're listening to this after Christmas in January. Right. Yeah, so we can actually.
So it will be coming out in the next. It'll be coming out in the next couple of months.
In the next couple of months, and people can, if they haven't watched at Christmas, because we can mention it because it would have been out by now.
Yes.
You've done the thing with David Walliams.
Well, So on Sky, After Ever After, Hansel and Gretel has been out this Christmas just gone, and for those that saw it, they will see that I played the executioner in this wonderful. So basically, the concept is what happens to the story after the story. So
brilliant! Okay, great.
So what happened to Hansel and Gretel after? The story of Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, brilliant.
So you have that you'll see that, you know, that you would have seen that the wonderful Sheridan Smith plays the witch and what happens to her. The wonderful Sophie Thompson plays the stepmother and you know, and things. And then you've got this and David Walliams playing the troll, of course.
Oh, amazing. Which was
incredible. And also the narrator. And it's but I was one of the, and that lovely Jocelyn, there was four of us. There was Jocelyn G.
I know Jocelyn. She's one of my favourite people ever.
Lovely Jocelyn.
I love Jocelyn. She's so hilarious.
Whenever I can work with that woman, I work with her.
A quick story. She was a presenter for me, and we went on the holiday show together. And we went to Ireland, and we went to Enya's castle to find out where it was and see it. And she went in the gates of Enya's castle, and Enya closed the gates, and we couldn't get her out.
Oh, how funny. She is hilarious.
And she's literally years ago, hilarious.
Years ago, I did Little Miss Jocelyn with her. So I was on her show.
And you worked with David on Little Britain as well, didn't you?
Little Britain and Big School as well.
Oh, I love Big School as well. Yeah, of course you were. I mean, that's a great, what a great person to know.
Whenever there's something that I can do, David always... He's very, very nice and lets me do it. So, like I said, you know, if you saw it this Christmas, the executioner, she doesn't get to do her job properly. That the whole village is starving and they're hungry, and you know, there's been a spell put on them, and then it all sort of turns out. But an executioner, and we were up to our when we were filming it. I remember we were up to our literally our elbows in mud, and
it was just
a costume nightmare. And you know, there I am in like a Hessian sack and something, you know, like wearing this kind of thing. And but it was a great fun character to play. And of course, we lost the lovely Boycie last year.
And he's in it.
No, he's not in it, but I based my character on
Tom. Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Brilliant.
Marlene Boyce. So the lovely, John Challis, I remember talking to him and saying, I've just based a character around you when I was filming it, and I said, I've based this character around you, Boyce, and she's this executioner who cannot do her job properly. And he went, oh, I bet that was fun. And I went, yeah, I said, I had such a laugh. So those that managed to watch it, or I think you probably get it on something, on one of these things.
I mean, I can't wait I can't pretend we've watched it because we haven't. I can't wait to watch it. What a treat. I mean, and you've got, so much coming up, which is amazing. I mean, you've also through your career done loads of stage, including Measure for Measure, only by the Royal Shakespeare Company, no less. And you've been in Maggie May at the Royal Court Theatre in Liverpool. I mean, what's theatre? Do you prefer, is there one you prefer, TV or theatre?
I've kind of been doing musicals as well for the last, goodness sake. So I do like that sort of instant thing. And I've been very, very blessed. I mean, working with the RSC and stuff like that, and at the Royal Court. And I love smaller theatres and smaller venues. I love me panto. I do like that instant connection, but it's about balance. I think it's always about balance. And I love being on screen and I love working with amazing people and learning. We should never say we give up learning because we don't. We're always learning.
Someone said to me, you should always be, like that. You should always feel you're the least talented in the room. You should always surround yourself with people that are better than you, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
You should always, because we never stop learning. I learn on every show I do from the way actors play stuff and the way people do stuff. But theatre, I suppose, if you're in theatre all the time, because the lifestyle is so different in theatre. I mean, basically, you give up your nights and your social life, don't you?
Yeah, and if you're touring, I mean, I've done a lot of tours that have meant that you're one-nighters all over the country, and you're in a tour bus, and you're in very close proximity to the cast all the time. So, you have to, there's a different discipline with yourself. You have to go, right, I'm away from my family for this amount of time. I'm I've got to keep myself healthy and well because I'm singing every night.
And
listening to wonderful podcasts like yourself, on the tour buses and things. So you have to kind of, there's a different discipline. But I've done a lot of theatre, so I feel like I need to get, I want to get back on the box more, to be quite honest. I would love to be in another soap. I live up north now, north of England. So
come on, Emmerdale, come on, Corrie.
Yeah, any of them,
see you behind the bar in Corrie.
Oh, I know, a long-lost dingle, I think, or something.
Oh, yeah, in Emmerdale, you'd be a great dingle. Oh, Emmerdale.
A great long-lost one.
Well, listen, it's been so amazing to have you on the podcast. I mean, I loved you working with you. If what this has done, it's got me back. You know what this job's like? You lose contact with so many people. What I love is it's got me back in contact with so many people. Yeah. So we're definitely going to meet up for a drink up north.
Definitely up north.
Yes, up north, yeah.
Up north.
It's been amazing to talk to you, Cheryl.
And Julie, amazing. And listen, you're doing some great work too, and all of these podcasts are amazing. So just keep it up for us as well. And, if there's any jobs going, Lee.
I'd love to work with you again. It'll be amazing. It'll be amazing. So, all right, lots of love, and I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, take care. Bye.
Bye. So I am back. It is February 2023. Cheryl Ferguson is back with me. Hello.
Hello, how are
We're
you?
We're here to allay everyone's kind of like, what is this top secret project? Because we obviously talked quite a while ago for this new series before you could announce the amazing project you did, which was, tell us what it was.
Well, it was a Netflix series called Hard Cell, Cell as in a prison cell. And it was written and directed, and also she starred in it, the wonderful, amazing Catherine Tate, who played five characters in it, set in a prison cell.
A women's prison, wasn't it? It was so good. It was a six-part mockumentary, one of Catherine's amazing series. As you said, she played the main character I love she played was Governor Laura Willis, the governor who I thought was just incredible. There was inmate Big Viv, Gar Marco, a few others, but you came in. Basically, the governor, Laura, thought that rehabilitation was aided by creativity, wanted to put on a musical, and she gets in, you as yourself playing Epsy Stenders Heather. I mean, that lots of people called you Heather throughout. Was that kind of a weird thing to do?
Yeah, well, I remember Catherine basically, giving us a call and said, Cheryl, look, because I've worked with her before on Big School with David Walliams and stuff. So, I had worked with her before and thought she was genius. And we'd had a bit of a giggle when we had the screening of Big School, and that was fun. She phoned up and said, look, I'm going to ask you something, and I don't know how you feel about this. And so she said, I'd like you to be in this series that I'm doing for Netflix that I've written, and I'm going to co-direct it. And basically, would you play Cheryl Ferguson? I just laughed, and I went, oh, I said, can you play yourself? And she went, well, you know what I mean. So she explained the story, and she'd said, actually, that she'd written this quite a few years ago with me in mind, obviously, to play that, but she was hoping I'd say yes to it because she'd written
I know, otherwise it's like, oh no.
It would have been, it would have been a bit that. But it was when the oranges are not...
Oh, the oranges are the only black, the prison thing,
yes.
Yeah.
So when that came out and it was on Netflix, they said, oh, Catherine, do you have something? She said, yes, I have this. And they said, oh, no, we've just got this new prison thing coming out. Can't do it. So she'd been shelved for all that time. And then she'd explained again, and they said yes. So this was quite a few years, as you know, later that Hard Sell got offered to me. But she was just, like I said, hoping that I'd say yes because she'd written me in it.
She'd already written it. Yeah, like you said, what weird thing to play, because I suppose you're still... You're almost playing a Cheryl Ferguson then, aren't you? Because
yes,
it's obviously not still you.
No, and there were certain things in it that I thought, oh, well, I wouldn't, not that I wouldn't say that, because you know what actors are like. They go, oh, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't wear that. But actually, there was things in it that I Cheryl Ferguson, do not wear. I don't wear scarves, but they put me in a lot of scarves. So I could kind of play...
A new version of Cheryl.
Yeah, a new version, yeah. A version of myself that, And what was very strange is that, obviously, I don't know if we can say it on here, but there was a certain very rude word that I was allowed to say. Netflix have allow you a certain amount of rude words.
Is it the F word?
No, it was the C word.
Oh, the C word. Oh, yeah, we won't say that on here, but wow.
No,
you got away with saying that.
Yeah, so, but there was two of us. So she was allowed two C words in it.
Wow.
And
I love the rules. I love the rules of that. I remember EastEnders. Yeah. I remember EastEnders had a, they were allowed one bitch or something a month.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Netflix allowed us to have two C words in it. And I was privileged enough to have one of them. And wonderful Chris Gascoigne, who's in Corrie, his wife Caroline, she was in it, and she was privileged to have the other one. So we call ourselves the two C clubs. We're in the C club, which there's not many people allowed to say that. So not that I should pride myself on that or get an award for it even, but
I think you should. But I suppose the other thing is, because what a running joke is obviously people constantly calling you Heather in it, which again, obviously in real life happens. So again, that must be a bit of a decision because you're going, right, I'm now eating into the thing that actually I probably want to go away a bit.
Well, that's true, because my agent, I remember him saying, oh, gosh, Cheryl, I don't know about this because we're trying to get away from Heather Trott. And I went, do you honestly think, Howard? I said,
I will never
get away from Heather. I won't, but all I can do is keep reiterating that Heather was a character. She's now dead and gone. And when everybody keeps asking me, am I going to come back as Heather?
You can't.
I go, no, I can't. They've seen the body. End of story, Jack and Ori. That's it. And I keep saying this, and then I keep saying, oh, wouldn't it be nice if casting directors, producers, et cetera, et cetera, had a bit more imagination
than that,
saying it, you know, and say, we're called actors, and we, that's a big plane that goes across my house.
Oh, don't worry. There we go. We've got a sound effect happening as we speak.
Sound effect, yes. Yeah.
But I suppose when it's someone like Catherine Tate, because obviously now she's just, you know, who wouldn't work with Catherine Tate, you know, as a main part in a brand new series. That's the weighing scales, isn't it? It's kind of like,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And it was a brilliant script.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun, and there's a great twist at the end of it. And
oh, the end! I was actually in bits at the end. Yeah, I was absolutely devastated. We won't give it away, even though
I think because you can still watch it; it's still on Netflix. But what is interesting is that I think people watched the first two episodes and thought, "What's this about, really? Do you know what I mean? Is this going to be like Spinal Tap all the way through? Do you know what I mean? Is it going to be like that?" But actually, as you got more engrossed in it and more involved in the characters and sort of weighed it up a bit more, that end is literally genius. And I think, you know, people say, is there going to be a hard sell too? And I would love there to be a hard sell too. And I certainly would love to be in it. I don't know how. I think my character could actually be in prison for murdering a certain
prison
person.
Yes, you could actually be in the prison with them.
And the storylines in.
I mean, I suppose I suppose it's a bit of a criticism, is I actually thought it stood alone as such a brilliant comedy drama without her playing all the other parts. So I think it got a bit confusing because you were kind of expecting a Catherine Tate show and actually it was very different. So I was like, oh, I wish she'd actually just played the governor in the end.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of that sort of thing. And I think the thing is, it's one of those things, isn't it? That I think if you write, as they said once in Little Britain, you know, if you sing the theme tune, write the theme tune and do the theme tune and direct the theme tune, you know, you can be all encompassing for one person to take everything on. And I think, you know, it was a big project.
Where did you film it? How long did you take filming that and where did you film it?
Well, I come from Southeast London, and at this point I had moved to up north where I live now. But they said, would you please come to Southeast London and film?
So you're like,
I was like, oh, hello. But actually, it was very weird. It was off the old Kent Road, and it was like a factory. And I stayed in a hotel on the old Kent Road. And now, for those that know the old Kent Road, it's very, very interesting place. It is very kind of, it has its moments, and it has, you know, I could never sleep at night because the sirens were so like loud.
Yeah.
And I literally only wanted to be, you know, they wanted to put me in some sort of nice thing near St. Catherine's Dock or something like that. But the problem being is that I needed my car and I wasn't about to pay for the congestion charge every day and et cetera, or parking. So I just literally said, no, move me near the studio sort of thing. And they literally built a whole prison cell in this factory that is now used.
That wasn't a real prison. They actually built a whole purpose built prison.
No, they built a whole purpose built prison, so that's kind of where it was based. And I spent a couple of months there.
I guess it takes longer because of her playing different, because I've never asked it, what happens when she's in on screen at the same time? Does someone stand in for her as the other one?
Okay, so basically, she because there are heavy prosthetics in some of it.
Yeah, and that would take hours.
And they take a lot of time. Yeah, hours. So she's in hours before everybody else. And then obviously they have to figure out the days that she needs to be in certain prosthetics. And then she has to give her face a rest of it. So like the prison governor doesn't have any prosthetics. So basically, you know, there was like days where she was just, and then when it's somebody else, they were so clever in kind of doing it that they would get the double back, you know, over the shoulder of the double who would look like her, that you'd never see her in the sorts of, you know. And then they would film, like, say suddenly the scene was with her as the governor and it was in the canteen or something. When it whipped around to me and another character that she was playing, they'd shot it so well that you would never, they couldn't have the two in the same frame. So,
yeah, you know, it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing. I watch it going, how on earth? And you probably film those over different days as well because of her
absolutely
having to get made up. Yeah.
Absolutely. And also it's things like, you know, we have to do those scenes over and over again. So when normally you do a scene, like for example, when I was doing Enders, you know, you do a scene, it's
done and dusted.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas you might have to do that three or four times in a day, or maybe over a couple of days, because you're doing it, you know, with different characters in it. So you're redoing
the same scene again and again.
Things.
Yeah, which is I suppose it's all that continuity stuff, but actually, it's quite, as we know, it's quite hard to get things exactly correct. So it's quite a skill coming back
but also,
to the same scene.
There was a lot of improvisation in it as well. She kept a lot of that in. She liked that kind of thing. So she wrote it, and then certain lines she obviously wanted in, but other times she would just she just let the camera roll, and we were just like,
oh, that's amazing.
Of,
yeah.
Yeah. So there was a lot of that. So she obviously sat through with the and looked at all the reels of, like, you know,
that's
20
brilliant.
Minutes over.
I always think it must be quite hard directing yourself as well when she's directed, like, is it?
Yeah,
was
well, there
it...
was somebody else came in, a guy called James came in and kind of sort of co-directed it with her in that respect. But she had the big reins on it. You know what I mean? She had final decisions on stuff. And she knew exactly what she wanted and she planned it extremely well. And you, when you look at it, you don't think of these things. You know,
I mean, No. It's so cleverly done. And I was just, like you said, it's just a bit of a... It's not what you expect. It's not what I expected. And it took a couple of episodes to rip. But then I watched it actually through again. And I mean, I love it. It's brilliant. But I think, again, it's just because she's so clever. She doesn't just do the same thing again. And people are expecting the same thing again. And it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing with Catherine. I think she does that thing of goes away for a long time, comes back, does something. And then everybody goes, oh, that was great. Where is she again? And then she goes away. And then she comes back to something
and
else
it'll be some,
years later.
Yeah. So no news at the moment then on whether there's a second one?
Yeah, at the minute, I don't think there is one, as far as I know. Or if there is one, Netflix can't take it on. I think because of their financial crisis, they're not
prepared to
take it on. So whether she has written one or whether she's pitching it to somebody else, I don't know. But
I love that you're on the... I just love that you're on the... in the radar of all these amazing people, though, because I know you've worked with David Walliams a lot, and it's how nice for you to be in that radar.
I mean,
how brilliant.
No, that is the good thing. I think, you know, I'm able to, you know, I know that Matt and David are working together on stuff at the minute.
I know, yeah,
not,
they've got a new series, not, haven't they? Yeah.
And I just keep saying, come on, guys, there must be something.
Get me in,
in. I've not been restricted as an actress, you know, enough yet. Like Little Britain, you know, the characters I played in Little Britain, they would now not allow me to play, I think, you know, and also they've had to apologise for a lot of stuff, which
I know, which is ridiculous. I get it, but I don't get it.
There's some stuff that was very like, I think, no, okay, you can't, you know, you can't play a different race now. You know, we're not.
But I think that's the thing. Now you can't do it, but of a time, you know, it was fine. You know, so
absolutely.
I do. I mean, not fine, but we're living in a. Things evolve, don't they? But we shouldn't look back and cancel things out.
And I remember Enders talking to Rudolph about that, actually, because he said, you know, like when he did Love Thy Neighbor these years ago, and he was saying people have got the wrong end of the stick. He said, if you watched it and you watch it, it's clever. And that, I think, was the same with Little Britain. He goes, if you watch it, it shows that actually the black man, the black family came out on top.
On top, yeah. It was never actually taking the mickey of them.
It was actually taking
the mickey of other people.
Absolutely. And the same with Little Britain. I think that's the same thing. There has to be, in any kind of comedy, an element of truth. There has to be. You know what I mean? And so I feel really sorry for all the new young alternative comedians now who don't really know what they're allowed to say.
They're not allowed to say a thing.
No.
They're not allowed to say anything.
No. And like, I'm quite surprised in some ways that Catherine got away with a lot of the stuff in Hard Sell. But I think it's because of the way the story went.
Exactly. Maybe, it's what happens by the end. It tells the truth of the story. Well, listen, it's amazing. I could talk to you all day, but people will be like an hour and a half in now. So everyone can catch that still on Netflix. It's absolutely brilliant. Hard Sell, Catherine Tate, starring Cheryl Ferguson herself. A brilliant cast as well. Lovely to catch up again.
And to you, Lee. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hopefully we will work together in the future.
Oh, please, let's do it.
Yes, we must,
we must.
All right, lots of
everybody,
love.
Everybody, this is a great director here that's giving out this wonderful podcast.
Let's do our job CVs now. Click on the link.
Just take care.
Take care.
Bye.
You want to hear the unedited version with some extra content? Get the whole show by joining up for free to us on the Another Slice podcast player. Just sign up over there on anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox. You can also hear a full special episode with EastEnders star Jacqueline Josser, which you can only hear on Another Slice for free when you sign up. You can also press subscribe, and just for a few quid, you have access to so much more. I'll be back same time, same place next week. Thank you for joining us on season 4 of Soap from the Box. Have a great week.